Welcome to the Vending and Arcade podcast, where we interview people from all over the industry doing vending and arcade. This is going to be episode number 4 or 5, something like that. And this is our second in-person podcast and probably only one of 4 that we're going to be doing until next year's NBVA, because there's no way I'm traveling all over the country for one episode.
No.
So we have here 720 Vending. He has his own YouTube channel and he runs a full line and claw machine route. And we're going to be talking with him today. How's it going today?
It's going good. Enjoying Vegas.
Yeah, we're out here at NBVA right now. We're in one of the showrooms or something. We just kind of took a seat right in front of the AM whatever booth. So the question I start out with everyone, tell us about your journey and how you got started vending, the whole story.
So back in 2014, I started watching vending videos. Claw Kickers, back when he was just like 16, 17 in Phoenix.
And he's here today.
Yeah. He's here today. I got to meet him. Like, that was awesome. And I learned some of the stuff he was doing, bought my first soda machine. And
well, and he didn't have any full line, did he?
He did.
He did.
He had full line in a laundromat in Phoenix.
Okay.
He had snacks and sodas in a laundromat in Phoenix.
Did he get rid of that pretty quick? Or
when he moved to Michigan, he sold off everything.
Oh, okay.
And but he had claws, coin pushers, all that stuff down there.
I've seen some of his older videos. I never saw that full line though, so that's interesting.
Find the really old ones, really for old, the laundromat.
Okay.
And they're probably mixed in with just his regular route service.
Yeah.
And he was scatterbrained then, but we love him anyway. But he's a good guy, good heart.
He was your inspiration to get going?
He was my inspiration to get started and buy my first one. I bought my first machine and placed it. And after about 5-6 months, I bought my second machine.
And that first machine, where did you put it?
In the mailroom of my mobile home park.
Okay, and what machine was that?
It was a USI CB6. 6 selection, 200 can soda machine.
There you go. Okay.
And it's still in service.
Oh, is that one of the ones that's been broken into?
It's been broken into one time.
Okay.
And then I purchased a Dixie Narco 320. It's an old single price one. Put it in the same park. It has since been gutted, completely rewired, and is now multi-price with credit card readers. And after that one's was going for a while, bought another machine, placed it. Then I just keep buying more machines, placing them. And at this point, I'm in 3 trailer parks. And then an apartment complex calls me, wanting to know if I'm still doing, a friend of mine called me and asked me if I'm still doing vending. I go, yeah. And he goes, we just kicked our vendor out after he's been here 3.5 months and serviced the machines twice, and they're all broken down. So we kicked him out and he goes, can I give your information to my boss? I'm like, sure. Well, lo and behold, it is now 5 years later and I'm still there.
That's been a while.
And so I must be doing something right if I'm still there. And so then I have since found a hotel to put three machines in, one combo, a snack, and then one soda machine. I have a warehouse. Yeah, does so-so. But I don't own the machine. I just service it and collect the money. So I don't have to worry about
that's pretty lucrative.
Finding a new location for it. And then I got into, after watching Matt, Galaxy Games 843, Howard Hospitality Group, and Extreme Vending and Quick Play for a year or 2 years, and interacting with them, I finally decided to bite the bullet and buy my first 2 claw machines. I have one in a boba tea shop and I have one in a restaurant. Not going to lie, it's going to be a Hooters. Love it. They love me. I'm happy to help them. Those 2 claw machines are absolutely killing it, and I'm hoping to buy some more while I'm here this trip and either have them shipped home
or win one. That would be pretty nice.
I will be there for the drawing. If I win one, it'll be shipped to my house. I hope I win the big one. Or a key catcher. I want a key catcher so bad. But those are like hard to get because they're always out of stock.
Are they? Okay. That's not good. We want one too.
Just want to build the brand bigger.
Yeah, for sure. And at this point, how many locations do you have, and how many machines in total?
12 machines total. 10 of them snack, 10 of them full line, 2 of them claw, and 8 locations.
Between 12 machines, 8 locations. Okay, sweet.
My mobile home parks, one mobile home park has 2. 2 parks have 1 each. The hotel has 3 machines. The warehouse has 1. And then the snack and so, and then the 2 claw machines.
And how did you end up getting into those trailer parks? Because if I'm walking into a trailer park, I have no idea where to call. And
I've gone to the just the park manager there.
Okay.
And I was actually living in that park at the time, so I was able to talk to my manager.
Oh, okay.
And turns out the other two parks I'm in are owned by the same company.
So
word of me got around to the other managers, and they're like, let's bring a machine in.
So that hard way is just that first location, and then that kind of spirals into more.
It spirals into more.
Yep. There you go. And then regarding the soda machine, or regarding the full line, not the minis, yeah, where do you get your product and at what price?
Usually I get a lot of it from Sam's Club. Especially for the snack machines, Sam's Club. For the sodas, if it's not on sale at my local grocery stores, I will go to Sam's Club. If it's on sale at my local grocery stores, I will go in and clean them out. But I usually only keep enough stock on hand to restock the machines for a week to 2 weeks.
Okay.
Because I just don't have a place to store all that inventory.
Okay, kind of still running it out of your house?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and that's great, because anyone starting is going to run it out of their house. It probably, if I were to guess, probably take 20 to 30 machines to upgrade to even a small little warehouse.
At that point, I would probably switch to alternating my schedule to where I can still load up half the route in my car, do the route, and then do the other half of the route another day. Mm-hmm. So it would still balance out really well. And for the first 8.5 years of my business, I ran it with a little tiny car. And now I'm up to a full-size SUV.
So how did you transport those machines at first?
I have a pickup truck.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And the soda machines, I laid them down. Not supposed to, but I did.
But how far did you transport them?
Oh, usually within 5 to 10 miles.
Okay. Well, so, as long as you know, it's not that far of a difference.
I stand them up. I let them sit for 24 hours so that the refrigerant goes back down.
Even more. Maybe a few days at least.
Yeah, it's registration. It's like you have to treat it like a refrigerator. So if you lay a refrigerator down, it's got to stand up for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And that's all it truly is just a refrigerator.
Pretty much. When we bought ours from a BMW dealership, because apparently they changed the showroom, whatever the corporate is like, you can't have vending anymore. So we bought a very nice Vendo 720 for $800.
Nice.
And the vendor that was there, he's like, do not put it on its back, because we were driving it an hour away. So yeah, we put it on the trailer on its back, then stood it up, and then did the same thing to get off, and it ended up working very great. The machine's still running good. We ended up selling that one to help fund our mall locations.
Nice.
But yeah, that's kind of how that went.
And if I'm transporting a soda machine, I don't want to have to stand it up, or I don't have the time to. What I've done before is I've pulled the cooling deck out,
okay,
the whole cooling unit, and have the cooling unit sitting properly in my car, in my vehicle.
Oh.
And then you can tilt the machine over all you want,
yeah,
and stand it up, slide the cooling deck back in it, and turn it right on.
That's the way to do it. Is just a couple bolts, unhook some
two
hoses.
Two bolts and pull the drop tray out.
Okay.
And then usually like 4 more screws on the inside of it, and the whole thing will slide right out. Weighs about 50 or 60 pounds, but it's it'll let you just fire it right back up when you get it to its new home.
So it sounds like you're pretty hands-on with these machines.
I would rather fix them myself than pay someone to do it.
Yeah. That's the way to do it. I mean, how much have you done?
I've gone as far as rebuilding the cooling decks.
Oh, wow.
So I'll buy a new compressor, cut out the old one, and I'll braze a new one in. I haven't done it on camera yet, but I will eventually.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a cooling deck, knock on wood, in almost 5 years now. I haven't had a cooling deck go down.
Okay. Oh, and how long have you been doing this?
As of February, it'll be 9 years. As of this past February, 9 years.
9 years. That's amazing. And Are you still working a job?
Yes.
Okay. And how much time do you put into this per week?
Oh, I probably put between getting product and servicing them, probably anywhere from 20 to 25 hours a week. But okay. That also accounts doing my YouTube stuff because that's vending related. So I'm lumping that in with it.
Okay. And between, once again, regarding just your full line machines here, are all of them cash and coin or some of them credit card or
they all take cash and coins. Down to two machines that I have left that are not on credit card readers.
So how you said 10, so 8 out of the 10 are
credit cards? 8 out of the 10 have credit card readers on them.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. And tell us a little bit about those credit card readers. What do you use? How does everything work?
I don't use NYIAX. I use Cantaloupe.
Okay.
I have a mix of the ePort G10s and the G11s.
Okay.
And the new ePort Engage combos.
Okay.
And I love them. They work great. I have had maybe two issues in the 2.5 years I've had Cantaloupe.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. And how's their customer service?
Anytime I've called, I've gotten straight through to a tech, or if I have to call after business hours, they usually call me back first thing the next morning.
Oh, okay.
If it's a tier one issue, like a priority one, they will get you to after hours. You'll leave a message for their after hours, and then usually someone within 30 to 40 minutes will call you.
Nice. And what percentage of sales are you seeing between your locations or for credit card?
For credit cards, it varies. So it bumped, adding credit cards to my machines bumped my sales at least 25%.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good, especially for full line. I know we put a credit card reader on ours and it did not do 25%, I can tell you that.
And I also look at it this way, because I have some machines that don't do so well, even with the credit card readers, they still do their average, like my mobile home parks, they still do their averages and stuff like that with the time of year, the sales fluctuate. Kids aren't outside as much. But the good thing about having the card reader, yes, you're paying the service fee. Okay, that sucks.
But to get that stock, you can track the stock on your phone, right?
But I can track the stock, I can track the sales. I have it, I'm always checking my reports every day. And I can look at my sales and I can pre-kit what I need for the week a couple of days in advance instead of having to drive to all of my machines and see how much and see how much inventory I need.
Yeah, and to me, as long as you're breaking even on that credit card reader, it's worth it to just have it for the stock.
Yeah.
Especially in full
line. And Cantaloupe's been good to me. They're giving me a discount for anybody that wants to purchase off mine.
Okay, like in your description of your YouTube videos?
In my description of YouTube videos, you can get the G11 Pulse kit.
Okay.
Which even if you don't use it for Pulse, you can still use it for vending.
Okay.
And the ePort Engage series, which is their touchscreen version for vending machines only right now. They gave me a discount code and it gives you $30 off if you use the code.
Oh, wow.
At checkout.
Yeah, that adds up if you do quite a few readers.
It brings them down from like $330 to $300 a piece.
Okay. That's what NYIAX is about. So, yeah, it's all about just how it works better. And, you know, would you say the ePorts are, from what you've heard when you've talked to people, are ePorts better for full line or are they?
They're very, I like them better for full line. And people like them for, they've been very tried and true in full line.
Okay.
And they're not so much in the amusement world as they probably should be, but they're getting there.
I've seen them on a lot of, like, when you go into Walmarts and stuff, I see them on those, like, big, older-looking machines, but never on the new ones.
Never on the new ones. And it just depends on what NEN is doing for that.
Yeah.
Because NEN has a massive contract for Walmart.
Okay.
And Walmart's actually trying to kick NEN out from the last I heard.
Oh.
But it's due to the theft issues. And my local Walmart near me, they took out all the coin mechs, all the bill validators out of all their machines in the arcade at Walmart.
Just cashless.
And put a Kiosoft system in.
Wow.
So there is one station where you can load a cash onto a Kiosoft card and use it on all the machines. Or you can use your debit card on all the machines.
Huh. That's actually pretty cool.
I don't doubt it one bit, and I bet it cut down on their theft. Because people were breaking into the machines all the time.
Wow. And regarding those readers, how weatherproof are they?
I have not had one go down for weather.
Really? Okay.
And they sit on, I have one machine that sits facing to the north, so it gets frozen. I have multiple machines with the card readers facing the south, so they get baked in the sun.
And you're in Colorado, so that's essential.
Yeah.
To have a good weatherproof reader.
And even if it's snowing and raining out, they'll still swipe their card or tap their card. It'll still work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. We'll move on here a little bit to your mini claw machines. Tell us a little bit about those and like where you get the machines and how you've done all that.
I got the machines from candymachines.com. Love Kevin. Love the group. They helped me get them financed. I would think it would take me like a year to pay them off. Well, I was wrong. I had them paid off in 6 months.
Did you just take the profits from that and just keep on putting it into that payment?
I had one of my months, I had a $1,500 month.
Oh, wow.
So I took $700 and I just put a $700 payment right on the car, on the financing.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, instead of paying $120 a month for a year, here's $700, like boom.
Okay. And per unit, so for one mini, stock included, credit card reader and everything, what did that total come out to?
So the card readers I got from Cantaloupe, and I got them on the rental program, so they didn't cost me anything up front.
Okay.
Cantaloupe will rent them to you for about $17 or $18 a month.
Okay.
But that includes all their support. I mean, it's like a permanent rental program. But even if the one-year warranty is up on the hardware and it goes down, you call them up, and if they verify that it's failed and it's not, you didn't destroy it, they'll send you another one.
Okay.
But it's always covered under warranty at that point.
Huh.
So for the extra $7, $8 a month, it's a little bit of a peace of mind to have just your card readers going.
I would see not wanting to do that on full line, but when it comes to amusement equipment, you're not really vending out things, so you can kind of budget a little more for expenses like that.
Yeah, but I have it on my full lines too.
Oh, okay, you fine. Okay.
Because it's just that way it doesn't cost me. So like if I add a new machine, it's not costing me an extra $300 up front to put a card reader on it. It's just zero. They send it to me for $20 for the shipping and I slap it in the machine. I'm good to go.
Okay.
And it's just been a really good relationship with them. And so when I got my claw machines, Gopher, bless his heart, love him. Helped me figure out what to do. Even though he's a NIAX guy, he helped me figure out where I needed to connect, what to hook up, and how to hook up inside the Super Minis to get my Cantaloupe ports hooked up.
Okay.
Because I tried scouring the internet for some kind of setup steps for it, and it doesn't exist.
Yeah, you were just telling me before, you're probably the first person to do it on a modern machine.
And now it's there.
Yeah.
But I mean, like all these vendors, like you see all these old Sugarloaf machines with their card with Cantaloupe card readers, but nobody wants to tell you how they did it.
No. No, I mean, even with the NIAX pulse system and everything, it took my dad and I so long to figure that stuff out. I mean, there are some tutorials, but a lot of the tutorials are just like they're missing things and we had to kind of piece things together.
Yeah. And like Matt's done it. David with Extreme Vending's done it.
I did it a complete tutorial on how to solder in wires and do a really professional setup to track cash and coin on a system that's not, you know, candy machines where they do it really nice for you. Well, we figured it out. The CPU connector, it's like $3 on Amazon. You get that, you cut it, and then you take both ends, you connect one to the machine, you splice it in, you solder it, you do all that to the both pulses and the power and whatever, and then the other one, same thing. So basically when you go to the system, because we've had issues in the past where if we want to test it, it'll track it on the NIAX, we have to pay sales tax on that dollar, everything like that.
Yeah.
So now we go there, we unplug that 4-pin, NIAX gets shut off, we can test it all we want. So for you guys wanting to know how to do a NIAX, personally, I think that's the best tutorial on the internet for at least a machine that's not anywhere. I mean, when it comes to Mega Minis and stuff, that's a little bit easier, but when it comes to a machine, we did that on our Winner's Cube. No, we did that on our Prize Cube claw machine, and that was a 10-year-old machine. It's definitely not ready for a card reader. So
no.
We...
Yeah, the Cantaloupe ones, the Cantaloupe gives you the diagram for the pulse setup.
Mm-hmm.
So you give it, the red and the black wires go to 24 volts.
Okay.
So since there's not exactly a direct 24-volt connection in the machine, but the claws use 24 volts is what I found out.
Okay.
So the power supplies in there do 12 volts and 24 volts.
Okay.
Well, I just tapped the two leads I need for the card reader onto the 24 volt claw connection.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always 24 volts once it's on. So that powered up that. I did the ground to the ground. There is a 12 volt trigger wire.
Yeah.
That allows it to be enabled. And so that goes to just one of the 12 volt lines. And then the pulse wire coming off the bill validator, because it's on the super minis, it's one pulse wire. So it's basically spliced. One goes down to the bill validator, one goes over to the coin mech.
Okay.
And so I tapped into that for the pulse signal and the pulse read signal.
Okay.
So just basically I think it's the orange and the green wires. I tied those together and tapped them into the brown wire for the pulse.
Okay.
So in that one wire there, yes, it's got the pulse that sends the signal down, but it's also got the wire that reads all the signals, like everyone drops a coin in there and everything.
Yeah, for sure.
And for accounting purposes, if I test anything with coins and stuff, I don't even worry about it, because I use with Cantaloupe, if you get a 1099-K from the IRS or from them for the taxes, it only reads credit card transactions.
Okay.
So even though it records a cash sale on there, it don't mean that it's not going to be, you're not taxed on it.
Okay.
It's whatever you report.
Okay.
So, I mean, I still report all my cash sales and everything, but when I pull the money from the machines, I write down I write down how much cash and how many coins were in there, and I put that in my vending tracking system.
Yeah, I mean,
and then I have the separate line for the credit card sales.
Okay. That's what we found pretty good about NYIAX, is that they have a pretty good setup to where we put pulse one onto the coin mech.
Uh-huh.
And then we have pulse two. You have to call them to activate it, and that goes into the dollar bill acceptor. We track cash, coin, and credit, especially for our malls. All we do, February to March, one PDF, it reports every single dime. That's all we got to do. We don't have to do anything nice. Complicated. That means they trust us. There's no way we're skimming money.
Yeah.
And it just makes it really easy for mall managers. I mean, I get the situation you're in. It's like, okay, you're probably just handing them cash, right?
I actually cut each one of them a check.
Okay, so that leaves a paper trail. It's a little easier to track than for taxes.
So I use Vinsoft to track to do all my full line and my claws.
Okay.
And what I do is I don't count how many toys I have in the machine each week when I go to collect from it.
Yeah, I don't really
see. I just count the prize. So when I go into my Vinsoft application on my phone, it asks for the prize out counter reading.
Okay.
So I type in the new number for the prize out. So it's got the previous number, and then I type in the new prize out number.
Okay.
And it says, this is how many prizes were won. But as we all know, the prize sensor, if someone accidentally wins a double win, it's going to count as one win.
Okay.
So there's no perfect way to do it on any claw machine.
And there's so many prizes in there. It would probably add on a half hour to do that.
To do the inventory.
Yep.
So what I do is I'll just take the prize out counter, put it in there, it's like, okay, so I won 75 prizes paid out.
Mm-hmm.
So I put at least 75 prizes back in, but I'll count how many I put in.
Okay.
Or I'll come there with I'll fill a bag at home with a mix of like 100 items, and I'll just fill the whole bag into the machine. And then I hit the reset button on my card reader, and it tells me credit card sales on the card reader, and it resets the cash boxes.
Okay.
And so then I dump the change, and pull the cash, take it home, count it all, and then I put those numbers into my Vinsoft, and at the end of every month, it tells me how much my commission is for each location.
Okay.
And then I just go to the bank and here's a cashier's check, and I give each location their checks.
Nice. And you can, if they ask, you can be like, yeah, show them your phone with the Vinsoft. And
or if they ask, nobody's ever asked.
Yeah, we haven't had anyone ask either, but I've heard some horror stories where business, people get kicked out of locations because people don't trust people, like that. But that's a pretty good way to do it.
If you can't have any trust, it's not really good.
Yeah, exactly.
And with my Vinsoft, it's like, say, it does reporting. So it's always reporting. Every time I enter information, enter trips, my mileage logs, all that, expenses, it tracks it all. And so if I needed to run a report for a particular location of how much the sales were for that month, I can just go into my reporting, pull this month and here's this month, and filter it down to this machine.
Okay.
and generate a PDF report, and I can just print it off and hand it to them. And I've used Ventsoft for since 2018 now.
Okay.
So I can actually pull all of my reports back to when I first started using it.
Okay. A little bit back to the price. So what did you end up getting those machines for, the minis?
With financing,
that's
$2,900 for both of them.
And that's 10% interest, right?
You said? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a pretty good deal if you're not putting... when you do that, is there any money up front?
I used a firm through Candy Machines, and... No, actually, I didn't. I did... It didn't ask for anything up front. At least I don't think it did.
Maybe the first payment.
Maybe the first payment. So it would have been like, if I would have done it, it would have been like $121 for the first payment.
Okay. And then, you know, next month. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good deal for especially if you find a location, that's the hardest thing to do in vending. And then you don't end up having the cash. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Cause you don't want to risk someone else coming and snagging it up.
No.
Well, for your minis, what kind of product do you use?
I use product from Amazon, Candy Machines, Eva from Alibaba.
Is that plush? All plush?
Plush, so I get plush from Candy Machines. I get plush from Alibaba. I get boba plush from Amazon.
Okay.
I have an Amazon business account. And apparently, if you have an Amazon business account, you can be tax exempt. Did not realize that till they offered it to me.
That's pretty cool.
Okay. And I did one order from like Sweet Treat King and a couple others for plush. I usually get the mixes from Candy Machines.
Okay.
Like the mini machine plush, like the ducks, the poppets. I get watches all the time.
Do you do a lot of generics or do you have
a lot of generics, and I do some of the licensed plush and not so licensed plush.
If you were to give it a percentage, how much would be licensed?
Like about 50-50.
50-50. Okay.
Or should be licensed. It's the stuff I get from Alibaba.
Yeah, because we're discovering that a little bit. In my mall claw, I did 100% licensed, and I realized I can't pay out anymore. You know, $350 a piece, I can't pay out.
No.
So then we switched. Now we're about 60% licensed, and like the middle where the range is, because the Under the Sea has a really bad outside range.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of, around the edges we'll have a lot of license, in the middle we'll have like maybe one or two license, a lot of generics in the middle there. But now we can pay out a little better.
Yeah.
But at 50-50, and especially, you know, what price would you say each item would be?
Anywhere from, depending on the plush, anywhere from 20 cents to like a dollar.
Wow, okay.
It just in that range, and it just goes into my generic plush mix pile.
Are you at 50 cents or a dollar per play?
I'm at a dollar per play.
So pretty much whatever you pay out, no matter what, you're still
making money.
That's awesome. And that's the thing about the mini claws. It's like our claws, if we paid out every time, we'd be losing money.
Yes.
But with the minis, it sounds like that's pretty lucrative with how much you're making money. What do you usually pay out? Like, what's that rate?
One machine set to like 1 and 8. The other machine is set to like 1 and 4.
Okay.
Because when I go to collect from it, I don't see much wins on it, but I see a lot of cash.
Okay.
Or a lot of sales on it. Whereas the other machine, I'll see a lot of cash, but they've cleaned out like 70 or 80 prizes in a 2-week period.
So they just got good at it?
The boba shop, they're like eagle eyes on nailing them.
Oh my gosh.
The Hooters, it's probably a lot of the regulars, the customers and stuff that don't play machines a lot.
Yeah.
Or that are a little too intoxicated when they're playing, which I'm not gonna knock. They're giving me money. But I'll do a 2-week period and I'll have 40 prizes paid out on the Hooters machine, and I'll have 75 to 120 paid out on the boba shop.
Wow.
And I pull out the money and there's only like $50 difference between how much money came out of each machine.
Yeah.
But the amount of prizes won is like drastic. So I've tried setting the Hooters one to a lot easier to try and get more people to win, so it doesn't look like it's rigged.
Yeah.
I mean, they're claw machines. They're going to be rigged to a sense.
With that plush, what is your best seller? And then is that your favorite?
For the plush, like toys, like stuff like that, my boba shop, the boba plushies.
Okay.
Those do great.
Is that your favorite?
Your my personal favorites would be the vinyl keychains.
Okay.
The vinyl character keychains.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put them in there, and people target them.
Okay.
I mean, I'll put a couple on top. I'll put a lot more in the middle. So I'll make them dig for them.
Okay.
Or I'll bury them down some, and I'll have the little loops on the end of them hanging up towards the top. So people have to work to try and get them.
There you go. And for prize locker prizes, what do you do up there?
Currently one of them's got a corduroy Pikachu in it, and the other one's got a karaoke microphone.
What are the prices on those?
I think I paid $5 for the Pikachu and $5 for the,
okay,
for the karaoke mic.
Yeah. So the more people we talk to, we realize it's probably a better idea to get cheaper prize locker prizes. Cause I know we're running probably a $30 to $40 prize locker prize. And yeah, it's just like, we don't want to pay it out, but it sounds like, you know, if you're $5 prize locker prize, it's like, oh, I'd pay it out. Whatever. I'll just get
five another. Below is a good place to get prize locker prizes.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to take a trip.
Because you can get like Bluetooth headphones and microphones and stuff like that. Like, okay. Stuff that people will play for, but not break the bank to let it go.
Yeah. And we'll start with mini claws since we're on that topic already. What do you do when you look for locations for mini claws?
A lot of foot traffic.
Okay.
So like boba shops or restaurants. So like there's a lot of restaurants in my area that are like, they'll be busy 7 days a week. And if I notice that they've got a lot of, if I go in there and eat, because I'll visit all my restaurants in my area, because I live in Thornton, Colorado, so there's a lot of restaurants.
Okay.
And so I'll go visit them and look at them, like Mexican restaurants, we got a lot of those. And if they're busy all the time and they don't have a claw machine or they have an ATM and I see a lot of kids there, it's like, the kids tend to start running around when there's nothing for the kids to do.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I'll try and talk to the owner if he's there. Or if not, I'll try and come back on a day when he's there and it's not so slammed. Because if it's slammed, he's busy focusing on his customers and I don't want to interrupt that business.
Yeah.
But it's a good way to judge how busy a restaurant or how busy a location is before you want to try and place a machine there and try and do your pitch.
And regarding your pitch, what does your typical pitch look like for the claw machines?
I introduce myself and tell them that I do vending and that I do claw machines. And I was wondering if they'd be interested in having a machine on site. Won't cost them anything. And it takes up less than 2 square feet of space. That it's a nice little small machine. It's about the size of an ATM. I take coins, cash, and cards. So, or if you so choose, if they start biting on it and they get hesitate, I've had one hesitate because they don't want change, because they don't want clogged,
okay,
coin mechs and people beating up on the machine or coin mechs. Is like, well, if you're having a problem with cash and coins, I can do cashless only.
Okay.
Because you can do that on those.
Yeah, yeah. Some locations you got to get a little creative with the way.
And if they say yes, I'll bring a machine. I'll have a machine ready to go. And if I have to do modifications to it to get it ready, I will do it, but I'll bring it and get it loaded in and get it on location.
Okay. And I know this whole business is basically a chicken and the egg situation with the machines. We found that quite a bit, especially with searching for a location for an actual arcade. It's like, okay, do we want to go buy this $3,700 SpongeBob coin pusher or do we want to wait for a location? And it's like, are we going to pass up on the deal basically? But did you have a machine before you found the location or did you have a location before you found the machine?
So I ordered the machines and my friend Anime Frank, actually had a boba shop location, was looking for a location and it was far from him, but close to me.
Okay.
So he helped me get that location, but I made sure to have the machine first.
Okay.
So I ordered my machines, got them in. Got my card readers installed on them and then just pounded the pavement looking for, because he got me the one location. So that still left one machine sitting in my house.
Okay.
And then I was going to drive over to another boba shop and I'm like, no, they told me no last week. So I'm not going to try them again. And I was like, let me give Hooters a shot. And I walk in there and I just happened to, it's like, boom, I'm like, okay.
It's just crazy to me that you have that big of a, you know, commercial space or not commercial, you know, chain. Not many people get chains. I know Tinker's Toy and Hobby, they have Dairy Queen, but I know a couple other people that have Dairy Queens too. They seem a little more lenient, but to get a chain like that is it's really cool.
But it's just the franchisee.
Yeah, it is just a franchisee, but a lot of times those franchisees will own 50 of them.
Yeah.
So then it's hard. You walk in, you go to an employee, they're like, what? This is Hooters. And then, you know, you find the manager, then to the, you know, the branch manager, you know, the work down the whole
chain.
Get
a pie on the food chain.
Yeah, pretty much. We'll circle back to the same question. What do you look for in your locations, but for your full line?
Generally, that's going to be like foot traffic, if I know it's going to be there. Preferably greater than 50 employees if it's going to be inside of an office or something like that.
Okay.
Or like a hotel if they have a lot of, if they're a busy hotel.
Okay.
Because on the hotels, I will actually also include like shampoo, conditioner, toothbrushes.
Okay.
Cell phone chargers. Like my hotel location, I got cell phone cables in there.
What is your best seller for those like unique items?
Toothbrushes.
Okay. And I always thought that was a cool item. I owned a hotel vending machine for a little while there. Didn't do very well, but I always thought like if I did those items, they don't expire.
No.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. That's a good thing. So like my toothbrush kits I have, I get them in bulk and it's a little tiny tube of toothpaste, a toothbrush and a hairbrush.
Okay.
And I got a case of like 200 of them. And I think I paid like 22 cents a piece for them.
And what do you sell them for?
$2.50.
That's a heck of a markup right there.
Cell phone cables, the charging cables I have, it's a type A cable to, it'll do the tri-tip. It'll do micro, type C, and iPhone.
Okay.
And the cables, I sell them for $5. And right next to it, in the same machine, I have 3-amp superchargers.
Okay.
For $5 a piece too.
And what do you get those for?
I get the superchargers for about $2 a piece, and I get the cables for 50 cents a piece.
That's pretty good markup.
Yeah. Thank you, Alibaba. I got them from with Eva from Alibaba.
Okay. And once you find that location with higher foot traffic, high employees, what is your pitch to those? And how do you find that owner? Because I know vending machines are hard to find the owner, especially in office.
Vending machines are hard to find owners. Generally, you want to get up as high as you can on the food chain.
Okay.
If it can be the owner, great. If not, the general manager. And it's just, you talk to them, you try and offer, you're offering the service to them. I don't ever bring up commission. If I'm going to have to pay a commission, I want them to bring it up and then I will negotiate.
Okay. Do you pay commission on any of your
My two of my trailer parks, I pay commission. And my warehouse that I don't own the machine at, I pay a commission at.
And what is the commission of all those?
10%
of revenue or profit?
Gross. Gross profit.
Okay.
So that's after my taxes and cost of goods are out.
Okay.
So for one trailer park, it's 10%. The other trailer park, it's like 7.
Okay.
And then the warehouse location is like 10.
Okay. And is that the only three that you have a percentage on?
Yeah. And then the boba shop, I pay them like 20%.
Okay. That's pretty low typically for a claw machine. And then what was the other place? Your other claw?
At Hooters, I give them like 10%.
For a claw?
Yeah. I wasn't giving them one originally. And then I offered them a percentage and then I was able to get my friend into that one.
Wow. All right, moving on. What are your business plans moving forward?
To grow my amusement side more.
Okay. And why is that?
I have found that it is more lucrative, easier to maintain. We're having to worry about expired product. That is one of the biggest differences between the two is like, yes, I still have
profit margins.
Profit margin. The profit margin is way different. But it's been a lot of hard work to get to the way I'm at.
Yeah, I know. And I personally, it's for probably, I've been only doing the business for 10 months and probably the first 7 months was back and forth and back and forth. Do I want to do vending more? Do I want to do amusement more? Do I want to do vending more? I probably went back and forth 6 times and eventually found that amusement is a lot more. I personally don't own any vending anymore. My business partner does. He owns one vending machine and going to be a second pretty soon here. But typically I try to stay away from them now. A little more lucrative on the amusement side of things. But obviously, all vendors just trying to grow. Is there any massive goal?
To be able to leave my day job and have this as my full-time income.
Okay. And how close do you think you are to that?
Probably at least a few still years out.
Okay. That I mean, that's pretty good. Not everyone can say that.
A few years, maybe 5, maybe 10. I don't know. It just depends on how the market goes and how the world goes.
And hey, if it's in 10 years or 20 years, that's a dang good retirement job.
If I get to retirement, it's like, okay. And I'm have guaranteed steady income coming in.
Yeah. And yeah, you just keep on getting locations. Some get kicked out. You keep on adding more. That's an easy retirement. Maybe you got to pay people to move your machines at that point. But I don't know. To me, that sounds like a pretty dang good retirement.
Yeah.
What are your plans for your YouTube channel moving forward?
To help as many people as I can. I mean, like I do all the how-to videos. Like when I install new things and do repairs, because there's not many repair videos out there or people doing repair videos, because some of the people who do vending are very reclusive when it comes to explaining how they repair things.
Okay.
And they would like, repair vendors would definitely don't want people knowing how the repairs are done, because then they lose money. Well, I grew up in the world where if it's broke, you fix it. And
yeah, we don't see enough of that today.
No, and it's like everything nowadays is disposable. It's like, oh, it's broken. Okay, just throw it away and get another one. I'm like, no. I mean, one of my soda machines is literally 40 years old.
And that's
but it's got a brand new, it's got all new wiring in it, a rebuilt cooling deck, and credit cards.
Yeah.
It's perfectly fine and runs.
Were you able to get that one to track product?
Yes. Those ones, because I use the Dixie Narco Series 2 system, the 2D system, I get the DEX capability goes with it.
Yeah. And I mean, with those vending machines, I find it very cool, because if you learn how to fix them, basically cooling deck, motherboard system, that's all you got to replace.
Yes, everything else is just wiring.
Exactly, just to turn an old machine into a new one, pretty much.
Yeah.
So if you find one for $100 on eBay or something like that, on Facebook Marketplace, that's awesome.
Yeah. My most recent one was a Vendo 475. It was an old single price two-can deep machine. And cooling deck still works. It runs on old R12. I mean, it's like ancient. But all I did was I literally ripped out all of its wiring and I built a new wiring harness from scratch for it.
Wow.
Because I figured out Dixie Narco's wiring diagrams and figured out where everything goes. And so I built a new wiring harness from scratch.
That's awesome.
It works great.
That's just awesome. Yeah, if you guys need help with vending machines, go to his channel, 720 Vending. If you were able to go back in time and tell yourself one thing, back to when you were 18 years old, what would that thing be?
Get into claw machines a lot sooner.
Well, what age did you start your vending at?
Let me see, 2015, I was 30 years old.
Okay.
When I started it.
So get into it when you were 18.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that would be that's pretty much all I hear from any vendor ever. Start I wish sooner. I would have done that at 18.
Or invested sooner. Invested in something big to earn some money.
Now, this is the big question, and usually the answer is more vending. But what do you like to do in your free time that's not running your business?
Tinkering with cars. I'm working on an engine swap on my truck.
Okay.
And hanging out with family, camping, fishing, love it all.
Okay. And I think at that, we're going to start wrapping up the podcast. Do you have any questions for me? Or
what got you started?
A lot of YouTube. Back to what, it's always been in the back of my mind. I know I'm 18. I know that back when I was about maybe 13, 14, the thought was in my head. I know that 2 years ago, I contacted one of my friends to help me haul a vending machine.
Uh-huh.
Got cold feet, didn't pull the trigger. And finally, when I was 17, I started my vending business. We picked up a Dixie Narco
501E.
Yeah, 40 years old, $400. We ended up selling that, got that one from BMW. And then my dad was like, he's really into pinball, he's on pin side.
And oh, then, nice.
He's like, I know some people, they run claw machines, but the profit margins are better. I was like, oh, cool.
Fred, we're profit margins.
And here we are today. And here we are today.
I think Stern's at the convention this week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's where I'm going to be all day.
I want to see some of those new machines.
We just checked out the Pinball Hall of Fame. Half the machines were all broken, but you know what? All the Sterns were working good. And the machines that I'm good at are the new Sterns. So.
Oh, yeah. I love some of the old ones.
The old ones are fun. I hate EMs. Well, I won't say I hate them. Some of them are okay. I mean, I'll play them every once in a while, but personally, I don't like to play them that much.
One of my friends of the family used to have a Spirit of 76 from Gottlieb.
Okay.
And that was an EM.
Okay.
And that thing, oh man, the buzz, the bells, everything was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds kind of dumb, but like, you know, just new Sterns. That's my favorite.
Yeah. There's a channel I watch, what is it? Joe's Arcade or something like that. I can't remember the name of the channel off the top of my head.
Okay.
But he's always tinkering and repairing and restoring and repairing pinball machines.
Okay.
And he does EMs, he does solid states, but he doesn't do anything of the new Sterns. But he shows
you. Yeah, you don't have to repair those. They're so new.
Yeah. But he shows you all the repair steps. He goes to repair the old PCB boards and all that stuff. And he clears them up, paints them, and clear coats them, and they look just phenomenal. Wow.
Yeah. So at that, we'll be wrapping it up here. It was great talking
nice
to you.
Nice meeting you too.
And with that, we'll say goodbye and see you guys on the next episode.
Have a good night, guys.